It's a central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Liberty Tunnel opened triumphantly in 1924, the longest vehicular tunnel in the world and the key to extending the city to the South Hills. But the real triumph is the not-so-ordinary house perched at the southern edge of Mount Washington.
Four brick stacks of the Liberty Tunnel fan house tower over the surrounding houses on Sicane Avenue in this hilltop neighborhood. Here's Bill Lester, Assistant Director of Construction for PennDOT's District 11.
There are two exhaust shafts and there are two intake shafts where we draw fresh air in from up here and we push it down into the tunnel and then we turn around and we drag the bad air back out.
The fan house is the beating heart of the Liberty Tunnel. From here, electricity keeps the lights on, and crucially, the exhaust fans running. That exchange of air, out with the bad and in with the good, is what makes it possible to safely travel the 5,984 feet through the side of a mountain, says Lester.
You know, you can drive through the tunnel without passing on.
Every day, more than 34,500 cars pass through the tunnel. Lester stands with Joe Edwards, the tunnel's lead electrician, at the fenced edge of an exhaust shaft. It drops 270 feet right into the outbound tunnel, where cars are racing south. A giant fan pulls up lungfuls of acrid exhaust and pushes it out through the stack. I don't like to spend a lot of time in here, he said. No one lingers in the exhaust fan rooms. It means breathing poison, something that became painfully clear when the tunnels first opened in 1924.
More than 20 of men and women are in a serious condition as a result of being overcome by fumes in the new Liberty Tunnels today.
Poison death swept its vapors through the packed tunnels.
The Pittsburgh Press reported in its evening edition that on the morning of Saturday, May 10th, 1924, a record 649 cars jammed the Liberty Tunnel. Traffic officers told people to cut their engines, but the order was largely ignored, and carbon monoxide filled the space, leaving people slumped over at the wheel. The project's engineers had known all along that fumes would be a problem, so they designed a ventilation plant to pump in fresh air. But it wasn't finished until after the tunnels were opened to traffic, in 1925. But don't worry, nobody died. Now when something needs attention in the tunnels, an alarm rips through the fan house and the tunnel's portal offices, says Edwards. He points out a carbon monoxide monitor.
This is what we're all watching. They're watching this downstairs. And like I said, at 50 parts per million, they start getting alarms. And then they start turning on the fans and going in and check to see what's going on.
They are the roughly 50 people in the city's tunnel system who ensure everything runs smoothly in the Fort Pitt, Squirrel Hill, and Liberty Tunnels. At the Liberty Tunnels, that's just 6 electricians, says Lester.
They're the ones who make sure the lights are on and that the traffic's moving. And I mean, it goes all the way from people with flat tires into the tunnel to a major accident.
People panic when lights goes out in that tunnel. It's dark and they think something's going on. And even though they got headlights on, they just panic.
Anyone that's driven through a Pittsburgh tunnel and encountered that synchronized slowdown brake tapping that happens at the mouth can attest that humans in tunnels are panicky creatures. It was for just that reason that Pittsburgh city engineer W.M. Donnelly promoted a non-tunnel plan in 1914. He argued, people prefer the open air and views, not the isolation and fetid air of tunnels. He was overruled. For 90.5, WESA celebrates inventing Pittsburgh. I'm Margaret J. Krause.
UPMC is proud to support 90.5 WESA celebrates inventing Pittsburgh. UPMC, life-changing medicine.
It's a central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. For over a decade, the Young Preservationists Association of Pittsburgh, or YPA, has been highlighting the top preservation sites in the region worth saving. Past sites that have been rehabilitated or restored include the Dormont Pool and the Cork Factory in the Strip District. What sites have made this year's list? I'm joined now in studio by Matthew Craig. He's Executive Director of the Young Preservationist Association of Pittsburgh. Matthew Craig, good to have you with us.
Thank you, sir. Top of the day to you.
And to you. And Katie Sawyer is with us. She's chairwoman in this case, of the Board of Directors for your Young Preservationist Society. Katie, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Which preservation sites would you be interested in in seeing saved. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. And let's begin the conversation with which preservation sites have made your top 10. I imagine there are probably a lot of candidates for this. So what's there?
Well, what's interesting about this is I had a conversation about 2 weeks ago with Arthur Ziegler, who is the head of the Pittsburgh History and Landmarks Foundation. We were talking about the top 10 list. And I said to him, you know, is there anything else that should be on this list that isn't? He says, you know, that list could be 1,000 items long because there's just such a great, rich architectural history in Pittsburgh. And so really the point is just trying to save the ones, in our opinion, you know, working with other folks around the region that we think are the most valuable at this moment in time to try to put our attention to and to try to save them. And so for tonight at 6 o'clock at the Union Project in East Liberty, we're going to be unveiling for everybody what we think are the top 10 preservation opportunities.
For
the region.
We don't get to know beforehand. It's
embargoed. Oh, we'd be happy to give your audience a peek into what we're trying to do.
A little hors d'oeuvre, a little morsel. Okay.
That's it.
What? Give us a couple of examples.
Well, I guess I will start at number 10, and this might throw people off. And I wish I had a little drummer for, you know,
yes,
a little drum roll.
We might have that sound effect back there somewhere.
Pull it up.
Here we go. Nine
more to go. There you go. Number 10 is the Pittsburgh City Steps.
Ah, yes.
You weren't expecting that one, were you?
I wasn't. Well, no one expects the City Steps. They're everywhere. So we don't notice them maybe the way we should in terms of preserving them. Are any in particular or all, you know, all sets of them? Katie?
All of them, definitely. The City Steps are an amazing piece of history of Pittsburgh. And not only are the steps themselves, but they offer beautiful views of the city, the rolling hillscapes, and the beautiful, unique neighborhoods that we have. So they're a very important part of the city that I think are worth preserving.
And it's such a unique part of the cultural heritage of the city. And, of course, it harkens back to another time when, before automobiles became so common, people had to walk. And this was the way, because of the great hills and valleys in the city, moving people up and down. You did it by walking.
Well, I remember being a kid. You couldn't drive, so you had to, you know, walk everywhere. And you always were happy to see those steps. It was like a magical shortcut.
And I think we'd all be sad to see them gone.
Yes, we would.
Even though I know in Pittsburgh we always relate things to what used to be there. Oh, that's where the City Steps used to be.
No, we want to keep them there. And there's a love as you go up 18th Street. There's a lovely set that's lit at night, and mm-hmm. it looks beautiful. As you know, there's nothing about it that's, they're a structure. So we're talking about preserving structures. So certainly that would qualify. All right. So as we move up the list, what would be? Yeah, I'll just keep going until you say we can't.
Drum roll, please.
All right. Okay.
All right. Number 9 on our list. And people aren't going to relate to this necessarily by the address, but it's 212-214 Boulevard of the Allies. And people in recent memory, this is downtown, they would remember it as the old Papa J's that was there.
Ooh.
It's right on the corner. And this building dates from the 1860s. And what's interesting about this building is that it's actually sort of catty corner from where the Diocese of Pittsburgh's offices are. It's down that part of Boulevard of the Allies. But what's interesting is that they just sort of cleaned the buildings out, and they made a discovery that had been long lost, that the building started off as a brothel.
Well.
And there's some history in there that we might not even want to know about. And
they say it's the oldest profession, so why wouldn't there be an old building there where that happened?
But besides the point, it really is a beautiful, well-preserved building. And, of course, Papa J's had a nice business there for a long time.
You would know better than I, but aren't oftentimes brothels, the higher-end ones at least, aren't they sometimes structures of marvel, of architectural marvel?
I have no idea. I have no connections nor very little interest in brothels.
Well, nor do I necessarily. It's just something I read along the way, and I just thought maybe you could confirm that.
I'm sorry.
We'll move on from that.
You there. Yeah.
What's next on the list? Katie.
Number 8 is the Manassas Savings and Trust building.
Wow, and I wouldn't have thought of that one.
Yeah.
But you're beaming. What is it about the Manassas Savings and Trust building that...
Well, what's interesting, I think, is that, well, of course, Manassas has been having some difficulties, but the savings and trust used to be the place where there were money and resources. And even there, they don't have money and resources at the old savings and trust. So it's the building dates back, you know, well, right, like around the turn of the century, the last century. So it's a distressed community, and it seems like it would be kind of a nice statement to make for that community that you're not forgotten. And this is a unique, beautiful building, and saving this building may be like a domino effect in trying to get more notice and more resources into Manassas generally.
All right, that's 8 through 10. Yeah. How much... higher up.
Oh, you can probably talk us into all of them if you're nice.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Well, 7?
Number 7 is on Grandview Avenue. It's number 520 Grandview Avenue, and it's the last Victorian building in that neighborhood of Mount Washington. It dates back from 1910, and it's our understanding that it was the house of an old riverboat captain back in 1910.
A riverboat captain could afford a house like that, apparently.
Well, it looks right down over the river. It's such a magnificent view from there.
Would the incline have been around that he could take that down to?
Yeah, but this is further down, I think, from where the incline
is. It's right at the end of McArdle.
Okay.
And you can actually see it from the Fort Pitt Bridge. So you can see, you have a view from below, and you can have a view from in the top.
Yeah. And before I ask about, you know, what determines how these sites make the list, let's go to 6.
Oh, good counting. All right. So number 6 is, this will be a little curveball for you,
mm-hmm.
The Moose Lodge in Elizabeth.
I don't know why that strikes me funny, but I guess that's just another one of those things you wouldn't expect to see on the list. But obviously the people in Elizabeth would know why.
And that's where they kept their mooses, their meeses. What's the plural of moose? Mooses. And that building dates back from the 1880s. And that's another building that the Pittsburgh History and Landmarks Foundation has been working to save. And so we'd like to join their efforts and try to bring a nice moose building to Elizabeth.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and we're talking with Matthew Craig, Executive Director of the Young Preservationist Association of Pittsburgh, and Katie Sawyer, who is Chair of the Board of Directors for the YPS and or YPA, I should say, and the top 5 here. I think we can get through this in the next 5 minutes or so. So starting with number 5.
Number 5, we have the Wilkesboro Avenue Footbridge, which is on the north side, and that dates back to 1890, and that covers the ravine there. And it was a connector point for people to get across to get to California Avenue to catch the streetcar. And we have a very good opportunity to be able to save this bridge next year. We are in the working with Darlene Harris, councilwoman, who was kind enough to honor our group today with a proclamation letting everyone know that today is Young Preservation Association of Pittsburgh Day in Pittsburgh.
Well, that's great. And so, and you're celebrating here with us, which we appreciate. So we've got about 2 minutes left. So number 4.
Albright Church, which is over in Shadyside / Bloomfield / Friendship, and that dates back to 1906, and that's gotten a lot of attention lately because it's being threatened to become a Starbucks.
Number 3.
It's the George Westinghouse Castle, which is in Wilmerding, and that dates back from 1890 to 1926, and that's where George Westinghouse had his headquarters, and it's a magnificent structure.
Interesting. Now, we've got 2 more to go. Before we get to those 2, how do you determine which sites make the list? What is the criteria, Katie?
The structures have to be 50 years or older. They also have to be threatened in some way. But I think most importantly is that there has to be a demonstrated, there has to be demonstrated that there is potential for the site, that there's it's a preservation opportunity, whether it be community support, or, you know, interested parties, viable solutions. Those are all important pieces of determining our top 10 every year.
So, number 2 then, Matthew.
Number 2 is the Old Stone Tavern, which is in Greentree, and that dates back to 1782. And a lot of folks over a lot of years have been trying to save this, and we're trying to lend our support to that effort.
All right. And now, the number one site on the list of top preservation sites. Good drumming there, Matthew. Go ahead. What is it?
Well, if you are standing underneath the Kaufman / Macy's clock.
Ah.
All right. Picture that. You're standing underneath the clock, and you look across the street, and you see a beautiful example of Chicago-style architecture. The Frank and Cedar Building is our number one preservation opportunity for 2015.
Catty corner.
No, it's directly across that street there. Well, a little catty. Can we turn a little bit to your left?
Yes. I just wanted to drop a little Pittsburgh on you there.
There you go. All catty right. Wampus.
There you have it. The top 10 sites that have made this year's list put together by the Young Preservationist Association of Pittsburgh. Thank you for sharing that. You were going to unveil it tonight. You unveiled it here. We appreciate it. Matthew Craig, Executive Director of the Young Preservationist Association of Pittsburgh, and Katie Sawyer, Chair of the Board. Thanks, both of you, for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, we will talk with the governor about the budget situation. Can it be resolved? And be resolved soon. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.